Right, welcome back to the Alembic Files, you silly people, you. We're going to have a special guest today, and his name is Eric the Blacksmith, because his first name is Eric, and, well, he is a blacksmith. At least that's his avocation, maybe. And if you're getting this, like, kind of colonial visual of who he is, he also lives in Connecticut, the Constitution State. And
you had it right the first time.
Yeah, really. And so he's with us today. I'll give you more information about where you can listen to Eric going over some of the, I guess, what is it, 85? There were 85 Anti-Federalist papers. Is that correct?
Actually, well, there were about 85 or 86 Federalist papers. And I don't have the exact number of Anti-Federalist papers, but it was a body at least as large.
All right, well, since I'm Alan, we haven't brought Theo in. We're going to bring Theo in, and Theo's going to know how many Anti-Federalist papers there were. Right, Theo?
Yeah, I wish.
How about 56?
Okay.
I do believe it's 55 or 56.
I am a fan of Eric the Blacksmith.
Okay. All right.
Back at you, Theo.
There you go. Hey. All right, guys.
In Connecticut, the state where the Bush dynasty emanates from?
Oh, because of Yale?
Yeah.
That's right. The Bush dynasty. And apparently the Bushmaster, too, as of late.
All right. Yeah. You got it. He's referring, of course, to whatever happened in Newtown. All right. You recorded a number of audios that we'll tell people about where they can go. It's on thinkorbeaten.com, but we'll give more specific information. So they can check out some of the ones that you chose to do first. But why don't you run us through one hardly anybody knows about the Anti-Federalist Papers, and that's deliberate. And two, why you got involved. So just give us a baseline, a little bio, if you will, of what the papers were about, and then why it just and how it caught your attention.
Okay, Al. Sounds like a plan. The Anti-Federalists were contemporaries of the individuals who favored a stronger U.S. federal government, and they opposed the ratification of the Constitution. This was in the year 1787. And the old Constitution, it was the Articles of Confederation. It gave state governments a lot more authority. And the Federalists, the three Federalists, Jay, Hamilton, and Madison, basically came up with what I like to call ad copy. And the sources that I looked at over the years, Storing, and I got a book by Bruce Fronin. I also have a book that's superb. It's really a Cliff Notes version of what The Informer and Montgomery did. But this guy here, Kenneth Royce, he touches on most of it, but he doesn't really go into the deeper history that The Informer and Montgomery talked about. It's called Hologram of Liberty, the Constitution's Shocking Alliance with Big Government. I'm sorry?
I like that title.
Civic Belief 1. Congress was given few specific powers. All else was left to the states and to the people. Ample checks and balances protect the Republic from federal tyranny. Civic Belief 2. The federal government has become so powerful only because despotic officials have overstepped their strict constitutional bound. If 1 is true, then how did 2 happen? And Lysander Spooner in No Treason said, the Constitution has either authorized such a government as we have had or has been powerless to prevent it. Think about that.
Mm-hmm.
By either the Constitution's purposeful design or by its unintentional weakness, we suffer a federal colossus which takes a third of our lives and regulates everything from axles to yarn. So why aren't Americans free? Perhaps we weren't really meant to be.
Or ever were.
Or ever were to begin with.
Yeah.
I, at work, have exchanged emails with some coworkers. And I'd get the emails about how God founded America and in so many words, you know, the kill a raghead for Christ theology and philosophy that was very common. And to be honest, I got sick of hearing it. I got sick of getting the emails. So what I did was, I mean, I'm going somewhere with all this, so I'm kind of leading up to something.
Yeah, well, I asked you those questions. Okay.
So see if I can find the thing here. Actually, while I'm looking for it, maybe Theo could say a sentence or two.
I also get those killer raghead for Christ emails, and they make me sick as well. I know exactly where you're coming from, I think.
All right, let me also interject this because I promised to put this information down, so I might as well give a first mention. If you want to listen to the audios, and I believe, let me see, it looks like there's 8 of them with regard to the Anti-Federalist Papers that Eric the Blacksmith has done, just go to thinkorbeeaten.com and click on. It's right there for you to do that. You'll see on the left-hand side, let's see, Eric the Blacksmith, a little graphic there. Click on it. You'll have access to those 8. So there's no reason for us to go into any of these in any depth whatsoever, except for whatever Eric wants to bring to the fore. And we're kind of sure we're going to do 3 parts on this. So you can go.
Well, I wanted to mention that. I'm sorry. I wanted to mention that there were 8 that I did. I had 3 or 4 from Sentinel, but my MP3 player conveniently gave up the ghost. So there are more to come that will be by Sentinel.
Okay. All right. So that'll be reconvened. Good deal. And I would just say to both of you, I can tell you what the solution is to idiots who for some strange reason, believe that Jesus Christ is all into shedding blood to advance any cause. I just insult them terribly, and they go away, and they never come back.
Well, I got some letters and emails, and for the longest time, you know, I believed in the Constitution. I was a real, what I like to call a patriotard. You know, I was a big fan of Rush Limbaugh and all the neocon talking heads.
Who was I?
And I won't go into the whole story, but you know, when I say that Rush Limbaugh was the living end, I actually would like to insert like a laugh track somewhere, if I could find one. I think it'd be really appropriate.
I think Al can.
I'm sure Al can.
Yes. But you know, but the thing is, though, if he really were doing this from his heart, you kind of could almost say, okay, you're nuts, but you know, you're dedicated. But he's a shill, man. He's getting paid to do this crap.
And, yes, he is.
And that's what we have today, and folks don't realize it. They just align themselves behind the party and the show host that they – well, actually, it all comes from the party. So I guess if you're a Dem, I guess – what is it? Is Al Franken still out there doing it? I don't know. Or on TV, that Rachel Maddow. I swear to God, I mean, she never shuts up. I mean, you ask her one question – or she gets on one topic. You can just go out and go to the store, do whatever you want to. You can back. She'll be on the same topic.
She fetcherizes.
Yeah, exactly. She's the female, well, maybe, counterpart of Fetzer. I mean, honey, put a sock in it.
They called her. They called me a clown. Maybe they should call her a clown,
oh,
too.
That was the best. They called me a clown, Polly. What do you think?
And what happened was I figured that as somebody who's been into the shooting sports and the Second Amendment, I noticed a lot of regulations. I also noticed the local here in Connecticut, there was a case in New London, Kelo versus the city of New London. I also noticed a lot of things with taxes. And then the coup de grace was my seeing the word tenant on my mortgage. And There were these interviews done, and I'm trying to remember the name of this guy, some clown from New Jersey. His name starts with a V. He did these interviews with this guy named the informer. Yes. Vizine, I'm trying to remember his name. But anyway, they were great interviews, superb interviews, and it really opened a door for me that I hadn't seen before. And everything I've checked out, by the way, I like that clown. He's pretty cool. Everything has checked out. Everything I've looked at in reference to the informer and Montgomery has been right on the mark.
All right, and let me just cut in here for a second. Forgive me, guys. But, I mean, one of the things that I was told by Angie, who runs Think or Be Eaten, that since we have incepted these new shows, that – there's an interest in, and there are CDs being purchased. I want folks to understand There is a CD of all those interviews to which Eric refers there on Think or Be Eaten, and you can go there. The money does not go to anyone except Angie, who runs the site and does a lot of stuff for free and does go to the site and figure it out. That's one person doing that. So I would say nobody here will profit by those sales. But I'm glad you mentioned that, Eric, because that is a baseline. It is sober stuff. And although The Informer wrote three books that are for sale, don't begrudge that. But he's not like some of the clowns that are out there trying to, for a fee, make you a sovereign citizen and all this other crap. So I would say good that you mentioned that, Eric. But, folks, if you listen to that, you'll just get an idea. And the reason why we did the show, why we started this thing, both Theo and myself, was because we just want to get down to one thing in these late days, and that is do not expect good government. You don't understand at all that the Constitution is not yours, and that you can go ahead time and time again to the polls or whatever you want to do. You can think that every 4 years somebody's going to finally put us over the top, and it's not going to happen. So you have no ally in the government, and that should be getting a little bit more obvious, despite the administrations forget that. So I've said enough as it is, but we'll talk a little about the CD of The Informer later on. So pick it up again, Eric. I'm sorry. You did hit upon the fact about what the Anti-Federalist Papers were and how you were drawn to them.
Yes, Alan, this email, the series of email, I wouldn't mind reading a couple of excerpts. And this was after some of the Killer Raghead for Christ emails that I got. And I wrote, "Perhaps the problem goes deeper than we've been led to believe. The attached is a long read, but provides interesting insights into corporate entity known as the U.S. I have looked into some of the statements he makes. So far, everything is checked out. Basically, the Constitution is a compact between the feds and the states. Quote, we the people, unquote, are not party to it. And the attachment was writings by The Informer." And I got an email back. This is what he says. And this was CC'd to several people, sort of like a group. "I have never been much of a conspiracist, not that I don't believe men don't attempt it, just that they do not have the capacity of foresight nor the control of nature to pull it off. I have read a fair amount on the proceedings and the men involved in them. My reaction to what they did is admiration rather than condemnation. Not that any endeavor of man is perfect, but I see a healthy portion of divine providence in the formation of this country. And whereas this country has stood for human freedom, dignity, and justice, again, not perfectly, therefore, I hear a twinge of blasphemy in claims that it is an evil enterprise. There is enough evil to be battled without attacking the good." Okay, and he goes on a little bit. And he does make some references, some religious references. My response is, Patrick Henry protested that people was enumerated in the documents with a capital letter, changing the entire meaning of same. The Anti-Federalists were PO'd because the delegates in Philly were there under the rubric of tweaking the Articles of Confederation. After weeks of secrecy, there was a new government form. The articles were trashed and the, quote, new government, unquote, was foisted upon the people. Many articles explaining the true nature of the convention were squashed. The Farmer, Cato, Sentinel, and the other Anti-Federalists knew that the fix was in. The people never ratified it. The state of Rhode Island voted against it 11-1. It was the only state that had an opportunity to do so. The colonists themselves were angry at the deception practiced on them. Washington threatened an embargo of the state in 1791 unless Rhode Island went along. North Carolina also protested, but less vehemently. Admiralty was brought inland. The Constitution cannot be brought into federal courts because of the Uniform Commercial Code based on the ancient law of Hammurabi. Barron versus Baltimore of 1833 has not been yet overturned. It stated that the original founders established the Constitution for themselves. The ruling forestalled any bequeathal to progeny. I do believe rights come from God. I would like the Constitution to apply to me, but it doesn't. I also believe we have been told many myths that we have bought wholesale. Read Hologram of Liberty by Kenneth Royce. The founding lawyers could have established a system with far less power bestowed to the executive and judicial. They were told by the king if they didn't dance to his tune, they'd lose everything they had in the old country. The 1783 Treaty of Paris incorporated this country. King George III dictated the terms of the treaty. Since when does the loser dictate the terms of a treaty? The New Jersey Compromise, if memory serves, would have established something along the lines of the Swiss system, where we would have enjoyed real freedoms. If the above is wrong, then why do we need permits, waiting periods, bans, etc., etc.? If it were up to me, nothing of the kind would be required. So that's just a part of the dialogue that we had. And there were some other guys who mentioned that they had driven to Middletown to apply for their pistol permit. One of the questions asks, why are you applying for the permit? In both cases, the answer was, quote, I want to exercise my Second Amendment rights, unquote. Each time the officer crossed out the answer and handed back the application and said that their answer was not acceptable. This story is very upsetting to me, as Connecticut is a shall-issue state, and the actions of our state employees is unacceptable. And I also responded to this gentleman. Interesting points. I don't want to be misconstrued. I'm grateful for how good we've had it in this country. And I would fight to the death to defend my home against any invaders, foreign or domestic. And I refer basically to my home or this nation if it was actually invaded by some swarming hordes coming from overseas. But I guess we are, really. You know. But what are the real threats versus threats we are told about? I would not deign to say the U.S. is evil, but the founders were human just like everyone else. We have deified them. And I just ask if the deification is justified. If one looks at the makeup of the Constitutional Convention, one realizes that a decided majority were lawyers. Bankers, too, were thrown in for good measure. Now, I do recall what Christ said to and about lawyers. I try to look at things as they are, not as I would wish them to be. The flesh is vulnerable to the evil one, as Satan is the most subtle beast of the field. Perhaps the most succinct explanation of how we stand is the brutally honest riff done by George Carlin about the real owners of this country.
Yeah.
If you've not seen it, it can be Googled. Cynical? Perhaps. Accurate? Unfortunately, all too. I've traveled a little and can say that average Americans are among the most compassionate, yet most naive people on God's green earth. We've had it very good, more than most throughout history. I think, unfortunately, that this is about to change. We are entering a period of neo-feudalism that has not been seen since the Middle Ages. I'm not sold on the idea that this nation was divinely inspired. It was about the money, another marketplace, ultimately established by the British East India Company. We went from overt control by the Brits to covert control. Yeshua did not exhort us to enter politics. Politics these days has become more irrelevant than ever. I do understand, however, that we can be in this world and not of it. I do subscribe to the conspiratorial rather than the accidental view of history. That kind of sums it up.
All right. I'm sorry to have stepped on you, but I do want to be fair to Theo, who I can smell burning on the other end of the line.
Absolutely. I'm going to stick a sock in it for a little while here and listen to Theo.
That's all right. No, I mean, Theo, I'm assuming there's some things that have dinged in your brain that you might want to address. Is that true? Go ahead, please.
No, you know, Eric wrote, I wish that I was eloquent enough to write. I just like to listen to him some more. All I can say is hear.
Well, this is what we're saying, and that is, why do we think we're different? It's because we were told we were different. And that whole process began from the moment that we could read. And as Theo has come across lately, and also Benny from the International Texans, some audios from John Taylor Gatto that I think are very revealing. And the bottom line of why you have a public education system, which, by the way, was not part of any kind of document or promise in the original 13 states. There was no such thing as a provision for a public education. No, because towns took care of it themselves. And I don't want anybody to think that's construed as that platonic crap about it takes a village to raise a child. But communities took care of their own. And if you thought they got a deficient education because it wasn't publicly mandated, take a look at the writings right? From everybody in the 18th and 19th centuries, they put everyone to shame. And these were people who were children in one-room schoolhouses that did pretty well for themselves and didn't need a national or a federal Department of Education. But that's where we've gotten the myths about the founders, the Constitution, and unfortunately, and Christians should know better, but I think those who really are do, but most don't. Where's the connection between the United States getting favored status in the eyes of Jehovah? Complete falsehood. But, hey, you know, why let the facts get in the way of a good story? But, you know, that's what we're facing in these days. And I would also say, the three of us would agree on this, and I would ask people to consider, how many times in the course of a day do you hear information that you know is either deliberate or just badly incorrect and flawed, and you've got to make straight because you know better? How much data do we hear or read in the course of a day that we know we have to kind of decode? I mean, it's amazing, isn't it? I mean, it's all BS.
I try to block it out. I don't watch the mainstream news at all, and yet still when I'm talking to people personally, I still several times a day will hear something that I know I just have to bite my tongue and say, okay, sure, yeah, we went to the moon, right, or whatever it is.
Oh, please don't go there.
Well, I came up with a real, in fact, I shared in email about this. This one friend of mine who I work with is quite knowledgeable about American history, to the extent that he is. And I started to talk to him about, you know, the Informer and Montgomery and some of the research that I've done and the interviews and the knowledge that we really haven't been taught much, because I'll tell you the truth. I've had to do a lot of digging and a lot of searching to find a lot of this stuff on the Anti-Federalists. The Federalist information is very easy to find.
Mm-hmm.
Very easy to find, and the real little nooks and crannies that you learn about aren't really talked about in what I like to call schlockopedia. I mean, Wikipedia is good for dates and names, and that's about it. It's a good starting point. But I asked him, I said, well, you know, we've discussed the Federalist Papers. Have you, you know, what do you think of the Anti-Federalists? He looked at me, I kid you not, he looked at me, deadpan face, and he said, as God is my witness, what are the Anti-Federalists?
Right, exactly.
Yep.
He'd never heard of them. Now, after I picked my chin up off the floor, I said, I'll send you some emails about it, which I've done. But any of this information that I've attempted to share with people, it's either been ignored or I've been denigrated for it, because it basically busts up cherished myths. And there's something that Kenneth Royce does say in Hologram of Liberty: sacred cows make the best hamburgers.
Well, I did want to mention something, because you had no idea that we had done this. But I used part of that famous 7-minute monologue from Carlin, and I'll play it in its entirety. I'll just do a disclaimer that good old George, who brought that whole court case up about the seven words, are all probably in that 7-minute period. But, and here's the thing. Theo, you know, you've heard that 7-minute clip, right? They own you, remember?
Yeah, it's dead on. Yeah.
All right, I'll put it in this one or the next one, depending how long we run. But the people in the audience are laughing. And I think we could agree that if you had to put an affiliation politically onto Carlin, it would probably be Democrat, you know, because he popped up a lot on MSNBC with Oberman, who should be doing dog shows anyway. Jerk.
Yes.
Anyway.
Well, I don't know. You might maybe Green Party or something. He wasn't so pro either party. I didn't think.
Well, okay, and I know this is splitting hairs. But I'll be more specific. It doesn't matter if he was. I think the audience perceived him as such.
Got it. Yeah.
And they're laughing.
Yeah.
And I can't.
I'd have to go along with that.
And I don't know if they're laughing at what he's saying because of, like, you know, stupid Republicans. You know, I just don't know. It's like, folks, no, forget Republican and Democrat. You're all getting work, but you're in such hatred toward the other party that you can't realize you're getting played, because now our handlers know the time is short. And so what's happened is the acrimony between both parties has gotten deeper and deeper to keep people right there. They don't want them to drift away, to turn around and say, you know what? Let's look at our lives across 40 years, like Carlin said, that threw you overboard 30 years ago or whatever.
I still see George Carlin as being a modern, reoccurrence. You know how history repeats. George Carlin did the same thing as Mark Twain did later in life. I think maybe they had the same personality styles or something. But late in Mark Twain's life, he got really condemnatory towards the United States policy, the imperialism. And today, critics just slough that off as just, oh, he went senile or something like that. Oh, no. Mark Twain was seeing things as they were for the first time. He was seeing the big picture. It's the same thing with Carlin.
Well said, Theo. That's true, I think, because even Carlin, he said, if you scratch a cynic, you get an idealist. And I think the same thing could be said of Twain. I think
that covers George Orwell, too.
Well, I have in my hands. You know, you guys are hitting stuff. I mean, it's not serendipitous because, we've all covered this stuff, and so it just seems to happen like this. I have in my hand Mark Twain's Weapons of Satire. All right, I did this as a book exchange, and in it he is absolutely apoplectic about not only our involvement in the Spanish-American War, but the other debacle that isn't so well known, and that is when we over to the Philippines, whose people we liberated and killed the shit out of them, excuse my French. I mean, how can you liberate somebody and then go in there and nearly wipe them out? So he was absolutely crestfallen about it. And he also, I'll get to this later, you know how like the Patriots love to recite that excerpt about a patriot, in the beginning a patriot is like what? You know how that goes.
A feared man or a fierce man, hated and feared.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what, Twain wrote that, but you got to see what the whole quote is. and the other thing is also, I'll put that Carlin thing in there without a doubt. I think I'll also put the link up to something that I believe both you individuals saw, and that was with reference to a Common Sense Christian who did a 40-minute treatment of where in the world did Christians get all these ideas.
I saw that. I heard that. In fact, it's on my podcast, or it's on my MP3 player, my new one, and I enjoyed that thoroughly. I thought it was very very apropos.
Also, with our last Once Upon a Time, I believe that is 5. I put in a link that I got from Kelly Mashu, who sent me a title page of a book that contains the laws of the state of North Carolina, circa 1826. you remember seeing this, Theo?
No.
Oh, what do you mean, no? I sent it to you. You said to me, where'd you get it? You don't remember?
Oh, yeah, okay. I'm sorry. Okay.
Stop making sandwiches and listen.
Hey, make one for me, too. Right. I'll take a grilled cheese.
No, Colvin was always great like that. Andy, what are you doing? You fixing a bike? Listen to me. All right.
The North Carolina thing, yes.
All right. You don't happen to be by a computer? All right.
I'm
trying
not
to access it, but I don't know where I put it in my wonderful filing system. But on the cover, I mean, the title page says, you know, basically with the laws of Great Britain and the Charter of Charles II, part of all the laws of North Carolina. And you know, I mean, what else? And that's what Kelly said. He goes, does this kind of say it all? I mean, it's only for the state of North Carolina, but that's the point, though. I mean, it doesn't make a difference. Everybody fell in line under the back of the same stuff, and that was they were still respecting British rule. And, of course, as we said, we adopted their constitution, and it was our mode of law is based on English law also. Now, in a sense, that isn't really that big a deal, but when it goes beyond that, which is where we're going, we want to make people understand that we've never really been free. We've been allowed to be industrious and prosperous, but we were still paying tribute in Europe. That's just the way it is, and we are not our own people.
Well, from 1781 to 1787, we had the Articles of Confederation. And the founding lawyers, they were being threatened by King George III that they were going to be left with nothing but their undies if they didn't fall into line. And that's when the ad copy of the Federalists came out around 1787 or so. And the 1787-1788 was when the anti-Federalists were really quite prolific. And not only were there stories about the evil Indians and how we were going to fall apart at the seams, it was the problem-reaction-solution. And the Federalists really played that up. And if you read the Federalist Papers, especially when Hamilton wrote, I could read more lawyerly BS and fog in those. If you read the Anti-Federalist Papers, they're a lot more basic, they're much more down-to-earth, much more explanatory, and there's really a lot less window dressing.
We're about halfway. Go ahead, Eric, sorry.
That's okay, Al. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say we're halfway through this audio, what I'd like to ask you based on where you're going, and just pick it up from that point on, because that's kind of what I was going to ask you. And the other thing was, you know, as much as they objected to it, and of course I may have provided an answer for this, they more or less just went along with it, and I'm wondering if they were powerless, but before, you know, their time was done on this earth, they wanted to at least go on record as saying, we're not really cool with what happened here.
Well, that happened with several individuals. I mean, Patrick Henry certainly did cave ultimately, being a lawyer. And he, you know, for a time he did speak out against it. But there were a number of changing alliances, if you will. For example, Luther Martin, who is mentioned, he was one of the founding fathers. He's called one of the founding fathers. He was from Maryland. Refused to sign the Constitution because he felt it violated the state's rights. Well, he was sworn to secrecy. This whole convention was held on the second floor. There were armed sentries on the first floor, and all these guys were held to sworn secrecy. Well, he didn't like what he saw, and he went public. And along with that, I do have an article. Actually, it's a copy of an article from the 28th of January, 1788, State Gazette of South Carolina. And it obituated on the new Constitution. And this is what it said. It was actually a rhyme that slammed the Constitution and how the whole thing was done. In evil hour, his pen Squire Adams drew, claiming domination to his well-born few. In the gray circle of St. James placed, he wrote, and writing has his work disgraced. Smit with the splendor of a British king, the crown prevailed, so once despised the thing. Shelburne and Pitt approved of all he wrote, while Rush and Wilson echo back his note. Though British armies could not here prevail, yet British politics shall turn the scale. In 5 short years of freedom weary grown, we quit our plain republics for a throne. Congress and President full proof shall bring, a mere disguise for Parliament and King. A standing army, curse the plan so base, a despot's safety, liberty's disgrace. Who saved these realms from Britain's bloody hand? Who but the generous rustics of the land, that freeborn race inured to every toil, who tame the ocean and subdue the soil, who tyrants banished from this injured shore, domestic traitors may expel once more. Ye who have died in freedom's sacred cause, aye, why desert her maxims and her laws? When 13 states are molded into one, your rights are vanished and your honor's gone. The form of freedom shall alone remain, as Rome had senators when she hugged the chain. Sent to revise your systems, not to change. Sages have done what reason deems most strange. Some alterations in our fabric we calmly proposed, and hoped at length to see. Ah, how deceived those heroes in renown scheme for themselves and pull the fabric down. But in its place Columbia's tombstone rise, inscribed with these sad words, here freedom lies.
Can you repeat?
And many of these patriots of today have no idea what happened back then.
That's amazing.
Would you please repeat that line about the 13-1?
Sure. This was published in the State Gazette of South Carolina on 28th of January of the year 1788. When 13 states are bolded into one, your rights are vanished and your honor's gone.
Now, you see, do people understand that's where the problem is at? Because the citizens of the several states did not want to be federated. They wanted to be unto themselves. And now, again, critics will always say, well, that, you know, that was going to have to end sooner or later. Look, I'm fine with all that. I get that. But they fought the revolution, and they countenanced, if you will, the chicanery by the founders down in Philly. But they didn't. They were lied to. They were told the Articles of Confederation were going to stay. They were told that they would be states unto themselves. And they were lied to. And that's my only point. Regardless of what would happen in time, fine. But they were not told they were going to be federated under a central government, which is what they did not want. Any comments? Go ahead, guys. Go for it.
What do you think, Theo?
I have heard you say, Eric, that one of the major formers, one of the major players with the anti-federalists, maybe the most formative of them was I think it was Governor Clinton of New York,
AKA Cato. In fact, he's the gentleman that I read from first. He was one of the good guys, really, in this whole scheme of things.
Yeah,
definitely one of the better guys. He really, I think, he was actually for the people.
And that's
shock.
You know, the patriot idiots of today, the constitutionalists, they, as you say, they really deify the so-called founding fathers, whom you rightfully call the founding lawyers, and yet we really should honor guys like this Governor Clinton guy. He was the real hero, guys like him, and yet he is totally forgotten in history.
Yes, there were several of the anti-federalists, and among them, Thomas Jefferson's listed here. I have mixed feelings about Jefferson.
I think he sucks.
I think he talked out of both sides of his neck.
Yes.
Patrick Henry ultimately caved. Samuel Adams, he was certainly a prominent one, and he basically wasn't even invited to the convention. I wonder why. George Mason, Richard Henry Lee, Robert Yates, James Monroe, Mercy Otis Warren, George Clinton, you know, a.k.a. Cato, Melanchthon Smith, Arthur Fenner, James Winthrop, and Luther Martin, the gentleman I referred to earlier. I believe there were lesser players that aren't quite as prominent, but they did have treatises, and they wrote letters to their paper. But here's the interesting thing as well. Sentinel does talk about the efforts of the Federalists to pull subscribers from local newspapers if they didn't go along with the Federalist line.
That's the great American tradition.
It's the great American tradition, along with Hamilton basically absconding with Revolutionary War soldiers' money after he played them like a fiddle along the lines of speculation. Hamilton, the more I learn about Hamilton, the more I realize what a snake in the grass he truly was.
You know, it's funny because I would like to think it was Providence, but I know that it wasn't. If anything, it was probably two of the dark side minions who canceled each other out, and happily so. And I refer to the little duke out that occurred on the New Jersey side of the Hudson River when Aaron Burr.
I remember you and the Informer talking about that. Yes.
Yeah. Well, this is great. Real quick, and I also have some of the documentation that I refer to if you guys wouldn't mind. But, no, you got to love this. Yeah, Burr and Hamilton's ambitions were stepping all over each other, right? So Burr's the vice president under Jefferson. And I have to tell you, I have a special hatred for him, which I should not have, but I do, because he was the biggest freaking phony that's ever floated down the American presidential line. He is so full of crap, I can't believe it. Oh, the bit about sometimes the Tree of Liberty has to be nourished with blood of patriots. Yeah? Is that a constitution that allowed for that? I think not. But at any rate,
well, he was chasing skirts in France when all this stuff was coming down anyway.
Yeah, I know. And by the way, having children out of wedlock, miscegenation, you know, give me a break. You ought to go to Avalon or wherever it is, I forget, where he writes the letters to like the Cherokee Nation. He's writing letters to Aboriginals who have been here like 7 million years before he was, and he calls them, "I am your father, my little children." Can you imagine a couple? I mean, can you imagine? I keep thinking of Chief Dan George in this role. You know, what did he say? You know, I think they're crazy. They're not human beings. So,
yeah.
But anyway, okay. So let me. So anyway, going on with this whole thing. Burr and Hamilton have had enough. Burr calls Hamilton out for a duel. Hamilton is so sure he's going to lose that he writes his will before he goes. So they paddle across the Hudson River. This is the best, though. I don't want to get too far afield, but, I mean, there is the famous story in the American Football League 1973 championship game, the first overtime game in AFL history, the second ever in pro football, when Abner Haynes goes out and his coach tells him, if you win the coin toss, take the football. We all understand that, right? That's why it's a good thing. If you don't win the toss, then say you want to kick to the clock because they wanted to win behind them. Good old Abner goes out, wins the toss, and says, "I'll kick to the clock." All right, now, why is that in common with Hamilton and Burr? Hamilton wins the toss and can decide which way he wants to walk. Well, good old Alexander figures, "I'm going to walk to the Jersey Palisades." And that means at that time in the morning, without skyscrapers, when Hamilton paces away from the river, as Burr paces toward the river, and they turn, Hamilton is completely backdropped by, you know, no sun, trees, verdure, and he's looking into a sun-glinted river where he sees just a silhouette of Burr, and boom, guess who won? What a jerk.
Oh my gosh, jeez.
Theo, were you going to say something? Because I'm just going to finish something real quick, but go ahead.
Yeah, if you want to know what a scumbag Hamilton was, check out the works of The Informer or James Montgomery. If you want to know what kind of a scumbag Aaron Burr was, check out two books I could think of. Check out the first three or four chapters of The History of the Supreme Court of the United States by...
Gus.
No, I'm sorry. That's The History of Tammany Hall by Gustavus Myers. Or also check out the book Treason in America by Anton Chaykin.
Chaykin, yeah. Well, what happened, now Hamilton's dead, but Burr is now a criminal, so he has to light out, and he goes out somewhere, I guess, to Louisiana, and he's not done yet. He wants to sell Louisiana to somebody else after the purchase was 1803, and then Burr goes out there and tries to snooker some people and sell them, you know, basically the Brooklyn Bridge. Attaboy, Aaron. So at any rate, so that at least they canceled each other out, which wasn't a bad deal.
True enough. And Luther Martin, he ended up dying at Aaron Burr's house, New York City. This was at the age of 78. It was in 1826. And what did he do? He was taken in by Aaron Burr because he defended Burr at his 1807 trial for treason. And the, you know, bedfellows of politics rear their head. You know, he really, this guy Luther Martin really took a dislike to Thomas Jefferson, who was his one-time ally. So then Martin embraces the Federalists. So, you know, it's all of a sudden he doesn't about face. So he really, got PO'd at some of the things that went on. There is a book about him, Forgotten Founder, Drunken Prophet, The Life of Luther Martin by Bill Kaufman.
Also, this story may be apocryphal, but I thought it was interesting. When I was a junior in high school, I did a paper on Burr, and one of the things I came across was the story that while he was at Princeton, ambitious as he was even back in his college days, the report states that he threw back the sash and the shutters of his dormitory window and yelled up to God, "I bid you goodbye." All right, now, getting to that page I told you guys about, this is the title page. It says, Laws of the State of North Carolina, including the titles of such statutes and parts of statutes of Great Britain as are in force in said state, together with the second chapter granted by Charles II to the proprietors of Carolina, the great deed of grant from the Lord's proprietors, the grant from George II to John Lord Granville, the Bill of Rights and Constitution of the States, including the names of the members of the convention that formed the same, And then it says eventually the Constitution of the United States with the amendments and the Treaty of Peace of 1783.
There it is.
All right. And lastly, and I'll be done with all this, I found the excerpt I was referring to about how the Patriot blah, blah, blah platitude is taken out of it's taken out of context. And it appears in Mark Twain's book, as I mentioned before, The Weapons of Satire. And this is these are a collection of writings, and this one is one unto itself under the title of Monarchical and Republican Patriotism. And he said, in the beginning of a change, the patriot is a scarce man and brave and hated and scorned. When his cause succeeds, the timid join him, but for then it costs nothing to be a patriot. And here we go. The soul and substance of what customarily ranks as patriotism is moral cowardice and always has been. In any civic crisis of a great and dangerous sort, the common herd is not privately anxious about the rights and wrongs of the matter. It is only anxious to be on the winning side. So let's get that straight right then and there. But you see, this also harkens back, as I'm sure you guys would agree, to that whole thing about Robinson Jeffers, and I guess it's time to put that poem up, about the cold passion for truth hunts in no pack, about Ibsen writing in The Enemy of the People, that the majority is never right. I thought that was an overstatement. Theo, I think you did too, but you know what? In the years that have come in between coming upon that and today, unfortunately, that is very accurate, would you say?
It wasn't an overstatement at all.
At all. Unbelievable. And that's why I contend that the democracy is the worst thing in the world that you want. See, even that got into our lexicon, and that was also a fraud. You don't want a democracy. You know, we've talked about this. Plato listed four forms of government. The next to worst was democracy, followed only by, anarchy, into which democracy would eventually devolve. Because it's easy in a democracy, which is supposedly the majority rules, which is the mob rules. But if you can propagandize the majority, then you got no problem putting through what you want. And here we are discussing what we do, you know, the butt of all kinds of jokes because all the really people in the majority are brainwashed.
Go ahead. 88% of the population, well, as of, say, 10 years ago at least, 88% of the population goes right along and gets their children vaccinated and gets themselves with the flu vaccine and all that. 12% of the people have nothing to do with vaccinations, and guess what? It's the 88% who are affected with autism and all these other diseases, and that's the majority. The majority is never right.
That's true, and they're saying now that 1 in 50 kids has autism, and they tried to do the soft shoe and say, well, that's just because there's better detection techniques. Maybe it's because there are more kids with this kind of thing now.
Eric, Nancy Spiderwoman, the medical shill for Rockefeller Pharmaceuticals that they drag out on the Today Show and any other NBC News show when they want to, hail any kind of medication there is in the world. But what I had to laugh is the last time I saw them drag her sorry ass out, they also had an individual, a woman from the CDC. And Snyderman went into that, there's better detection now, and I could not believe it. But this spokesperson for the CDC kind of told her real politely, no. It goes beyond that, and it's time we come to that recognition. I was floored. I didn't even think that, that woman may not be in the CDC anymore, but, enough with the detection stuff. There's something wrong, and the fact that they won't go and do any kind of legitimate study of autism and vaccines, they won't do it. So what does that tell you?
Al, the study would be one of the easiest ones they ever could do. All they have to do is go check out a country. Go check out a country where they don't practice vaccinating. Hey, guess what? They don't have autism.
Or polio.
Yeah.
But
there was also the story about Imus, Don Imus' wife and the thermometer.
Yeah, I've told that story. Did you get that from me, or did you catch her when she was on?
I got it from you, Al.
All right. Yeah, that's amazing. And they're all sitting there, and they can't figure out what's going on. I mean, it's not like they're going, shh, don't say that. They didn't get it. And the long story of it was at Wyatt, which is their son, at his school – they were vaccinating, and they called hazmat in, and Imus's wife finds out that the reason they brought hazmat in is because a vial of the vaccine broke on the floor. And it was of enough ounces, actually it's probably milliliters or whatever it is. It was of quantity enough that it had to be cleaned up by hazmat. Now that's a vaccine.
And they're injecting this crap into
the kids. Exactly.
To their veins.
Yeah, and she's sitting there going, why were they there? Oh, God. Well, there you go. But, I mean, the point obviously we're talking about in general is the fact that if you have majority rule and think that's good, just understand that if you can propagandize the majority, a government or anything else can do whatever they want. And that's exactly what we're seeing taking place right now.
Well, I like what you said about the people being fooled into thinking they can't be fooled. There's an excerpt here about, you know, about the more on the whole the Federalist trickery. You know, we got a rigged deal and a raw deal, a subtle plan to assure a fattened calf ready for a vigorous federal parasite. It's high time for us to realize the truth about our Constitution. It has not served the precious cause of freedom. It was not so designed. A favorite story circulating in Richmond on the eve of the assembly session told of an old Pennsylvania wagoneer who complained that the Federalists were trying to trick the people into accepting a plan that would oppress them. It's for all the world like me and my wagon horses, the driver says. When they're grazing freely and need to get in harness, I whistle to them, coax them, and stroke them, and make them, as if I only mean to feed them and curry them, and so to let them go again. Just so the Federalist gentleman coaxes and wheedles and palavers us silly doodles that this here newfangled government may catch us, telling us that we may go loose again when we please. But my mind misgives me. When once we are caught, we shall be fast bridled and harnessed like my horses. The story ends with the sound of the cracking whip and the cry, gee, you sons of bitches. This is from A Song of Thunder by Henry Meyer.
What I'm going to do is, and forgive me for this, Eric, but we'll bring this first segment to a close. Only because if we all are agreed that we want to listen to the 7-minute rant by Carlin, we would need the time. Would that be okay with you guys?
Absolutely. Good with
sure.
Me.
One last thing, if you don't mind. I had a laugh while I was watching The Way We Were the other day, you know, like for the 17,000th time, but it's been a long time since the last time. And I think you guys will remember when Redford and Streisand go to Washington and back of this whole, you know, blacklisting and stuff. Uh-huh. And they get off the train, and some guy comes up and spits on Barbara Streisand. And they get into the swing out, and then they get whisked away, and he got sucker punched, so he's bleeding. And they go into this, like, I don't know, some closed restaurant. And I'd never heard this before because my head wasn't there. But he turns around and he gets down on his wife because she believes in causes. And he's like, for what? And then he goes, there's no freedom of speech. Not really. There is no freedom. And I'm like, oh, man. And it's true. Everybody yaks about the freedom of speech, and nobody's worse than the Tea Party. But if you say
anything, oh, geez, they're the worst.
But speak out against that old fossil, Ron Paul, who's a phony, and they want to cut your head off so much for exercising the freedoms that you want, that you think is constitutional, but that you won't grant somebody who says something that you don't like.
Yeah, Mr. Ron, I'll never trash the Lieber Code, Paul.
Will you join us again? Because we promised three, and this is one. Are you with us on that?
Yes.
All right, then. Eric, thanks a lot for being with us. That's Eric the Blacksmith.
Thanks, Al. Thanks, Theo.
Good night, Theo.
Good night.
National compulsive consumers. That's they think of that as their national pride. It's their civic duty. Consumption. It's the new national pastime. Fuck baseball. It's consumption. The only true, lasting American value that's left, buying things. Buying things. People spending money they don't have on things they don't need. Money they don't have on things they don't need. So they can max out their credit cards and spend the rest of their lives paying 18% interest on something that costs $12.50. And they didn't like it when they got it home anyway. Not too bright, folks. Not too fucking bright. But if you talk to one of them about this, if you isolate one of them, you sit them down rationally, and you talk to them about the low IQs and the dumb behavior and the bad decisions, right away they start talking about education. That's the big answer to everything. Education. They said, we need more money for education. We need more books, more teachers, more classrooms, more schools. We need more testing for the kids. You say to them, well, you know, we've tried all of that, and the kids still can't pass the test. He said, oh, don't you worry about that. We're going to lower the passing grades. And that's what they do in a lot of these schools now. They lower the passing grades so more kids can pass. More kids pass, the school looks good, everybody's happy, the IQ of the country slips another 2 or 3 points, and pretty soon all you'll need to get into college is a fucking pencil. Got a pencil? Get the fuck in there. It's physics. Then everyone wonders why 17 other countries graduate more scientists than we do. Education! Politicians know that word. They use it on you. Politicians have traditionally hidden behind three things. The flag, the Bible, and children. No child left behind. No child left behind. Oh, really? Well, it wasn't long ago you were talking about giving kids a head start. Head start? Left behind? Someone's losing fucking ground here. But there's a reason. There's a reason. There's a reason for this. There's a reason education sucks, and it's the same reason that it will never, ever, ever be fixed. It's never going to get any better. Don't look for it. Be happy with what you got. Because the owners of this country don't want that. I'm talking about the real owners now. The big, the wealthy, the real owners, the big wealthy business interests that control things and make all the important decisions. Forget the politicians. They're irrelevant. The politicians are put there to give you the idea that you have freedom of choice. You don't. You have no choice. You have owners. They own you. They own everything. They own all the important land. They own and control the corporations. They've long since bought and paid for the Senate, the Congress, the state houses, the city halls. They got the judges in their back pocket. And they own all the big media companies, so they control just about all of the news and information you get to hear. They got you by the balls. They spend billions of dollars every year lobbying to get what they want. Well, we know what they want. They want more for themselves and less for everybody else. But I'll tell you what they don't want. They don't want a population of citizens capable of critical thinking. They don't want well-informed, well-educated people capable of critical thinking. They're not interested in that. That doesn't help them. That's against their interest. That's right. You know something? They don't want people who are smart enough to sit around the kitchen table and figure out how badly they're getting fucked by a system that threw them overboard 30 fucking years ago. They don't want that. You know what they want? They want obedient workers. Obedient workers. People who are just smart enough to run the machines and do the paperwork and just dumb enough to passively accept all these increasingly shittier jobs with the lower pay, the longer hours, the reduced benefits, the end of overtime, and the vanishing pension that disappears the minute you go to collect it. And now they're coming for your Social Security money. They want your fucking retirement money. They want it back. So they can give it to their criminal friends on Wall Street. And you know something? They'll get it. They'll get it all from you sooner or later because they own this fucking place. It's a big club, and you ain't in it. You and I are not in the big club. And by the way, it's the same big club they use to beat you over the head with all day long when they tell you what to believe. All day long, beating you over the head in their media, telling you what to believe, what to think, and what to buy. The table is tilted, folks. The game is rigged. And nobody seems to notice. Nobody seems to care. Good, honest, hard-working people, white collar, blue collar, doesn't matter what color shirt you have on. Good, honest, hard-working people continue. These are people of modest means. Continue to elect these rich cocksuckers who don't give a fuck about them. They don't give a fuck about you. They don't give a fuck about you. They don't care about you at all. At all. At all. Yeah. You know? And nobody seems to notice, nobody seems to care. That's what the owners count on, the fact that Americans will probably remain willfully ignorant of the big red, white, and blue dick that's being jammed up their assholes every day. Because the owners of this country know the truth. It's called the American dream, because you have to be asleep to believe it.